Today we're beginning here in the middle of Nun Vav Amud Aleph by the Gufa. Just to review, our Mishnah told us that something that is purchased, something that is gifted, is not subject to Maaser Behema. The Gemara clarified where we know that from. We learned it from the Psukim by Bechor, and even though it's written by Bechor, because it uses Ta'aseh or Asiyah, that is a reference to Maaser Behema. In addition, the Gemara clarified, and that's what the next piece of the Gemara is going over again, is that if you purchase it at a time when there is no Asiyah, then that is not a disqualifying event. Purchase or gifting is only a disqualifying event when it was possible to be Asiyah. It was possible to bring it into the world of Maaser. Either that means physically, because Kol HaSheyavor Tachat HaShevet, that everything that goes under the staff of the shepherd or of the Baalim, that's what's classified for Maaser Behema, or Koshi Ra'ui, anything that can go on the Mizbeach and be classified by Haktasha or Hakrava for Maaser, that's subject to this disqualification of Lakuach and Matana. That meant the statement of Amar Rav Asi and Rabbi Yochanan, if you purchase the animals while they are in utero, that's not a disqualifying event because there's no Asiyah then. They can't walk Tachat HaShevet. And they also are not ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach. So that's what the Gemara is about to discuss. Gufa Amar Rav Asi and Rabbi Yochanan, Lakach Asara Ubarin B'Me'iman. You purchase 10 fetuses in utero. Kula Nechasim L'De'er L'Hitaser. All of them go into the corral in order to be counted towards Maaser. Obviously, that's why there's 10 here, so that you'd be Chayav in Maaser. They again demonstrate this idea that if you purchase it at a time when it is not ra'oi the asiyah, that there's no disqualifying event of lakuach. And vanantnan, don't we have our Mishnah? Halakuach, osh nitan lo b'matana, patur min Maaser Behema. Our Mishnah says lakuach and nitan b'matana are disqualifying events. Amar Rabbi Lazar, so Rabbi Lazar, who is a Talmid Muvak of Rabbi Yochanan, is a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan, says Rabbi Yochanan chazai b'chilma. So he says, I saw Rabbi Yochanan in a dream, and milta ma'alya amino. Therefore, I'm going to say something that's good. Rashi reads it as this was a good omen, auspicious event that he saw Rabbi Yochanan in the dream. He says, Ovenirali yodani omer ayom devaratam. I'm going to say something good in the Beit Midrash. That's one way you could read it. That's the way Rashi reads it here. Rashi earlier in the Masechta where this appeared also. In a context of a statement of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Lazar says the same thing back on Daf Hey, Rabbeinu Gershom there interpreted it in a similar fashion, which was it's auspicious to see Rabbi Yochanan in a dream. The alternative is that Rabbi Yochanan came to him in a dream, and either Rabbi Lazar gave an explanation that Rabbi Yochanan approved of, or Rabbi Yochanan gave him the information or some explanation for it. Amina can mean here that I will say, or Amina is that I did say. So that's the question of whether it's in the past I said something and Rabbi Yochanan was giving a stamp of approval, or is it that I'm going to say something good because Rabbi Yochanan appeared and it's auspicious. So Amar Kra, Ta'aseh, B'shat Asiyah, Mi'eita Katuv. So that the Pasuk says, or the limud that we have for Maaser Behema being disqualified by Lakuach, comes from Kein Ta'aseh, L'Shorcha Vitzonecha. And since it says Asiyah, which is the disqualifying factor because of the Hekesh between Bechor Banecha to Maaser Behema, and the reason we know it's talking about Maaser Behema not Bechor is because of Asiyah, that means that that disqualification is associated with Asiyah. So Bizman Asiyah, when it's possible for it to be Asui, whether again that means to walk and it can be part of the Maaser, or whether that means simply that it can go to the Mizbeach, is Ra'ui the Mizbeach, that's the way Rashi interprets it, then Lakuach will be a disqualifying factor. Absent that, Lakuach will not be a disqualifying factor. Or in essence, Rabbi Lazar presents the same answer that we saw at the end of yesterday's daf from Rova, that the Shat Asiyah is crucial to the psul of Lakuach and Matana. And as we mentioned yesterday, it's going to be now apparent in the Gemara, if you believe that an animal is disqualified from participating in Maaser Behema prior to its eighth day, then even in the first 7 days, if you purchase the animal, it will not be a disqualifying event, that Tosafot already points out. If you believe that it can be brought into the world of Maaser during those 7 days, even though it can't be put on the Mizbeach, if it can be part of the deer for Maaser, the corral for Maaser, then it will be a disqualifying event. And that's basically the next line in the Gemara. Eid ve Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim. Shimon Eliyakim challenged the Rabbi Elazar this answer that he gave. Halakuach chal al mechuser zman. That a purchased item is chal even on something that is in its first 7 days. Mechuser zman. So that would be against what you just presented here. You presented here that if it's not b'shat asiyah, it's not a disqualifying event. I'm bringing you what seemingly is a brayta that says that if you have an animal that's mechuser zman, which means it's not b'shat asiyah, and it still is disqualified through lakuach. Amalei zo eina mishnah. He says, first of all, that's not a mishnah. It's not clear what that means. Whether it means that that's and not an authoritative brayta. It's not a brayta of Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Hoshaya. Therefore, it's not authoritative over here, and that's what he's saying to him. Don't worry about it. Or Zoin of Mishnah is saying, okay, maybe that's the case, but that's not the halacha, or it's a brayta that has the wrong position in it, whether that's wrong because it's not authoritative or wrong because the halacha is not that way. V'im tim salam ar Mishnah, and even if you want to say it's authoritative or that you have to make sense of this brayta, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehudai, Mishum Rabbi Shimon. It's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Shimon, Damar, Mechuser Zman, Nichnas the deer, the Itaser. So there you have a situation in which the Mechuser Zman can be put into the corral to be counted towards Maser, and that's why it's a disqualifying event. Bahariu ke Bechor, because it has the same status, or it is similar to a Bechor. Ma Bechor Kadosh Lifnei Zmano, Bikarev Lachar Zmano. A Bechor is Kadosh Min HaBetin. It's Kadosh as soon as Peter Rechem. Yet you can't bring a Bechor on the Mizbeach till the 8th day. So the first 7 days it's Kadosh, even though it can't go on the Mizbeach till the 8th day. Af Mechuser Zman Kadosh Lifnei Zmano, Bikarev Lachar Zmano. Similarly, something that is Mechuser Zman can be made Kadosh, even though it can't end up on the Mizbeach. How broad this statement is, the context of our Gemara, it's speaking about Maaser Behemah. It's possible that this principle only exists with regards to Maaser Behemah, which is Maaser Behemah is similar to Bechor, that you can't be Mekadeshit. You can't put it into the corral to be counted towards Maaser Behemah in the first 7 days, but you can't put it on the Mizbeach. If it's the chosen one, you can't put it on the Mizbeach until the 8th day. That's similar to Bechor. Or is this a more generic statement? That even other kodoshim, which you can't put on the Mizbeach until the 8th day, maybe you could be makdish them in the first 7 days. So it's a machloket in the Rishonim as to what the scope of this statement, as to whether it's narrow in scope just about Maaser Behemah, or it's broader in scope and it applies to other kodoshim. And the same question could exist as to whether there is a restriction against making a kadosh, or simply the chatchila, you shouldn't be makdish it in the first 7 days. But if you did do it, it would work. So that's also not clear from here, as well as from, we'll see, in the Gemara and Murah, as to whether it has broader application and what exactly is the problem. So we'll delve into it more when we get to the Gemara and Murah. But the answer that Rabbi Elazar is giving to Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim is that the bright that you brought is either not authoritative or not something we need to worry about. And even if you want to say it is authoritative, or we need to worry about it, it's under the opinion or the dat yachid of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. So that could either mean that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, that's the braita, and Rabbi Yochanan doesn't subscribe to that braita. He's speaking about the Mishnah, or the Stam Mishnah coming up, that we're going to say where Mechuser Zman is not qualified to go into the deer. Or you could say it, and this is the way Rashi explains it, he can even fit into this brayta. Once you say it's authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda changes the demarcation line or threshold for where there's asiyah. Normally, asiyah, according to others, is only from the 8th day and onward. That's where lakuach will be problematic. Prior to that, it will not be problematic. According to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, the line is birth. That's when you become into the world of asiyah because you become makdishit. If that's the threshold line, then according to Rabbi Yochanan, it will be disqualified for lakuach. And Liba, the Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, that will be a disqualifying event, and Rabbi Yochanan could even explain this as well. Tani Tana Kamei Derav. there was an Amor presenting Braitot in front of Rav. Ezu etnan, shenichnas ledir litaser. What is the case of a harlot's wage that goes into the corral to be counted towards maser? So just as an aside, we're going to get it to in tomorrow's daf. The Gemara is going to say the pasuk by maser behema says lo yivaker ben tov lera. You can't be distinguishing in what animal gets chosen for the maser behema. That means that all animals go through the corral and the tenth one will be maser behema. Whether it has a mum, whether it doesn't have a mum in it. If it has a mum, it'll end up being eaten by the balim locally. If it doesn't have a mum in it, it'll end up on the mizbeach. What about other disqualification? We know that a korban can be disqualified for many reasons, one of which is a mum. You have other disqualifications, like ne'avad, avad ba'avera. You have all sorts of disqualifications. Does that disqualify it from maser? Or do we say lo yivaker ben tov lera means anything goes, and anything can be maser? The Gemara tomorrow will narrow the scope and discuss which things are or are not included in maser behema. One of the items that passes muster and is allowed to be put into the corral for maser behema is etnan. Etnan is not a disqualifying factor, and therefore, if you put the etnan through the maser behema, if it's not the tenth one, doesn't matter, it's just part of the ten to get to the tenth one. If it turns out to be the tenth one, then it would basically be maser behema with a mum in it. It has its mum built into it, which is that it's etnan, it's disqualified from going on the mizbeach. Kol shenatnula, he gave it as a harlot's wage, v'chazar v'lakacho mihemena, and then he bought it back from her. So now, v'ifsilei v'lakuach. Wait, this is a problem that it's disqualified because you purchased it. So what do you mean, the problem of etnan? Etnan is the secondary problem. The first problem you have is that you purchased it. Once you purchase it, that's a disqualifying event. What does it matter that it's etnan or not etnan? You can't put it into the corral because of the fact that you purchased it. Ishtamitate hadam Rabbi Yasi am Rabbi Yochanan. This Amora that was presenting the Braita before Rav forgot about what Rabbi Yasi am Rabbi Yochanan said. Lakach asara ubarin b'mei iman. If you purchase 10 ubarim in utero, kulam nechnasim ledir lehitaser. All of them go into the corral in order to be counted towards maser. Or in essence, what he forgot is, there are times where purchase is not a disqualifying event. The simple way to read the Gemara over here, and that's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it over here, is he brings two lashonot. I'll read you the first lashon in a minute. The second lashon is the one that he favors and is likely what's being described here, which is kagon shenatan ubar parato. He gave her as the wages for her harlotry, he gave her a fetus that was in utero. V'chazar lakacho mimenu ba'od shubar. And then he bought it back while it was still in utero. So therefore there's no iser lakuach over here, and that's why there is no problem of putting it into the deer, putting it into the corral for maser behema, because neither event was disqualifying. He gave it to her as a wage when it was in utero. That means matana or lakuach. Either way you want to describe what's being given to the woman over here was done in utero. So since it was done in utero, that's pre-asiyah. It's before the threshold by which lakuach or matana will be problematic. So that's not disqualified. And then he bought it back also in that time period before the threshold of when it would be a disqualifying event. Since both of those took place beforehand, then it can be called an etnan, can go into the deer, and it's not disqualified because of matanah, it's not disqualified because of lakuach. That's the answer of the Gemara according to the Rabbeinu Gershom. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it. According to Rashi, and some of the Achronim point this out, it seems that Rashi thinks that the disqualifying event over here is the matanah, which is that when you give it as a gift, that would be a disqualifying event as the etnan or to the zonah. So therefore, if you give it to her while it's in utero, it's before asiyah, and therefore it's not the threshold time when it can be disqualified. But chazar v'lakacho, the Gemara is not addressing over here, because according to Rashi, chazar v'lakacho, by definition, will never be the disqualifying event. And that is because it's the equivalent of a reset button. If you sell something and repurchase it, it's as if nothing ever happened. It's as if you erased the history because it's back in your hands. which is a question with regards to other items like bikurim, other things where your ownership is essential to the performance of the mitzvah with regards to the item. If you sell it and repurchase it, do we view that as being a reset as if you owned it all the way through? Or do we say there was a transaction in here and then that transaction is disqualifying? From Rashi, some of the Achronim, one of you, Dayek, that Rashi thinks the whole problem here is Natana b'matana, and that's all the Gemara is addressing. It's not addressing the buyback, because the buyback would have erased history. And so the buyback's not the issue. The only issue that we have is the matana that was to the zonah. And that was taken care of because you gave it to her while it was in utero. You gave it to her while it was in ubar. So that's why, according to Rashi, the whole issue was matana, and we erased that by saying it was done by ubar. Because Avila Kacho is never an issue, because even if he bought it back later on, that would have erased history and it would have been back in his possession, and the matana wouldn't have mattered at all. The Gemara says, Viti Asraihi. Why do you have to set up the case, or why do you have to have the case be b'chazar b'lekacho? Why does the Braita bring the case that it was a repurchase? Why doesn't the Braita just explain the case as being where the woman, in exchange for her services, gets an animal, but she's a frum zona, and now she wants to do Maaser Behema, and that etnan is part of her flock, and the question is, can she bring that as Maaser Behema? Wouldn't have that been a simpler case for the Braita to discuss and say that the etnan is not disqualified? The Gemara says, Bizona Kutit, the non-Jewish harlot. And therefore, the animal with her is obviously not relevant to Maaser Behema, and that's why the Chazar V'Lekacho becomes important. Now, the Rabbeinu Gershom has definitely a different Gersa in the Gemara, but he brought a first Lashon before in explaining the case, and says the following. It says, Ubizona Avodat Kochavim Kamayri. Then with a non-Jewish harlot, Velo It Chayve B'Maaser. Therefore, it was never chayav in maser. V'dami ki chazar l'kacho menu, ki l'kacho shelo b'shat asiyah. Therefore, when you purchase it from her, it's as if it's purchased in a point of time where the disqualification is not meaningful. V'leve asur l'kuach. Therefore, there's no isur l'kuach. So he has a girsa like this, which he rejects. Clearly, he had a different girsa in the Gemara, and that's what they note here as well. But what he's explaining is that when you gave it to the non-Jewish harlot, that makes it in the world of Ois Meiser. There's no Meiser Behema for her. When you purchase it back, even though now it's a full-grown animal, it doesn't matter because Lekuach is only disqualifying when it's Ra'oi the Meiser Behema. When it's in the hands of the harlot that's not Jewish, it's not Ra'oi the Meiser Behema because she's not Jewish. There's no Meiser Behema for her. So when you purchased it, that's not a disqualifying event. The Lekacho, because the Lekicha was done from someone where the Asiyah is not meaningful. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it before, that the reason that we entered in here, and it's not a problem with Lekuach, is because it's in the hands of this Zonah Kutit. If you extrapolate what the Rabbeinu Gershom is saying, then anytime you purchase from a non-Jew, it should not be a disqualification of Maaser Behema, because it was not qualified for Maaser Behema when you purchased it. You brought it into the world of Maaser Behema post your purchase, and that means that it doesn't have a Shem Lekuach. That's a big chiddush, and again, it's not found in our Gemara. Obviously, the Rabbeinu Gershom had a slightly different girsa, and the Rabbeinu Gershom himself says he doesn't love that answer, and he brings the second interpretation we noted before. Rashi, on the other hand, here says that the question of the Gemara is, why do you need to worry about lakuach over here? Why don't you just simply say the disqualification was that it was a gift in a loose sense, meaning it was a quid pro quo, it was bartered transaction, but the etnan should be the disqualifying event. Why do you have to buy it back to have the disqualification? What's the necessity for the repurchase over here in order to wipe out, in a sense, the lekuach? Then you should just have it be that it was given as a matana to the woman, and then that also should not be a disqualifying event because it was given to her when it was b'mei iman, when it was in utero, and therefore you shouldn't have to buy it back to erase history. So the Gemara says, V'lukma b'zona Yisraelit. Why don't you just simply say it was a Jewish harlot? V'ti Asraihi. And then just set up the case in the Braita that it was her, and she, can you take my surveim off of it? And then you don't have to get into this complicated case. Kamash Malan, the zona Yisraelit, lo avietnan. That shows you that a Jewish woman who acts as a zona and takes compensation for it It's not called etnan. Kidabaye. That's similar to Abaye's position. It's machloket Abaye and Rava, which we'll get to in the Gemara in Tmura. So over here, the Gemara says and follows through that this is Abaye. Damar Abaye, zona kutit, etnana asur. If it is a non-Jewish harlot, her compensation is disqualified from the mizbeach. The kohen, habala, en olakeh mishum leoyechal el zaro. But a kohen who consorts with her does not have a violation of lo yechalel zaro. The kohen is not allowed to be together with a zonah. But this does not qualify as a zonah. Zonah Yisraelit, on the other hand, if she is a Jewish harlot or Jewish zonah, etnana mutar, the compensation is not problematic to put on the mizbeach. The kohen abalea lokeh mishum lo yechalel zaro. The other hand, a kohen that has a relationship with her is in violation of zonah and is in violation of the law of lo yechalel zaro. So now the Gemara explains why that is. That is because the definition of zonah and the definition of etnan do not cross paths. They're two different dinim and their character is defined by different circumstances. Zonah kutit, etnana yasur. By the zonah kutit, the compensation is problematic for the mizbeach. Kamar toeva, toeva me'arayot. We learn how to gzera shavar. It doesn't necessarily have to be a real gzera shavar over here, but it is at least a mare makom. It tells us what the definition of toeva is with regards to a etnan, because by etnan it says, Ki tovat Hashem elokecha hu, that's the etnan, is considered to be tovat Hashem. And by arayot it says, Ki kol asher yasem mikol toivot ha'ele. So there's a connection between the toiva of arayot and the toiva of etnan. Ma arayot, dolo tafse bu kidushe. The definition of the problem of arayot is that you can't marry such an individual. That's what makes it, the offspring is a mamzer. That's what makes it into arayot. And everybody agrees, at least, that by Chiyuvei Karet, there's no Tfisat Kiddushin, the offspring is a mamzer, and that's called a Toeva. So therefore, only a Zonah where Kiddushin are not Chal, is that considered to be Etnan. So by the non-Jewish woman, there's no Kiddushin, therefore, there is a problem of Etnan, just like Arayot. By the Jewish Zonah, Kiddushin would be Tofes, even though it's problematic. You can still get married despite the restrictions that are associated with it, because it's only an Iser Lav. And Iser Lav does not disqualify or render the Kiddushin invalid. And so therefore there can be Kiddushin with her. That means that the Etnan is not going to be classified as Etnan. But Koina Bala Aina Lokeh Mishum Lo Yechalel Zaro. The Lo Yechalel Zaro Amar Rachmana V'hai Lav Zarehu. Over here, if he was to father a child with this woman, the child that was born would not be Jewish, would not be miyuchas after him, because the non-Jewish woman would grant the child its yichus, and so therefore there's no problem of lo yichalel zaro, because it's not zaro, it's not his zera, it's not his offspring. By the Jewish woman, the zaro would be his zera, and therefore it would be a problem of lo yichalel zaro. Or in essence, what Abaye is saying is, the definition of zonah is a woman who has relations with someone who is asur to her, or an invalid partner. That means that anybody from an Iser Lav to an Iser Karet to an Iser Mita Bidei Beitin, all of those disqualified individuals who have bi'ah with this woman, render her a zonah. That's whether it happened willingly or unwillingly. Any one of those bi'ot make her into a zonah. So unlike what we think of a zonah as being someone who is a harlot, the definition of Torah of zonah is not someone who's engaged with multiple men and sells her services, but rather it's someone who had an illicit bi'ah. That's it. That makes her into a zonah. That's the definition of zonah. That's what a kohen is restricted from marrying or having a relationship with. The other hand, at the non-zonah is not being defined anymore by what is, again, zonah, like the zonah of the kohen, but rather by toeva. And toeva has a particular definition, which is lo tafse ba kiddushin. That's how Baye explains the difference here. Etnan zonah of Israelit is not problematic. Etnan zonah of Ikutit is problematic. And vice versa, with regards to the Kohen, the issue will be just the opposite way around, because by the Jewish woman, the Zera that is produced is his Zera. Therefore, if she is Negdar Kizona, then his Bia with her is problematic. By the Kutit, where the Zera is not going to be Miuchas after him, then the problem of Zona, or Lo Yechalel Zero, doesn't apply. Over there, it's not the Iser Lav of Lo Yechalel Zero for the Kohen. And that's why the Braita can't be speaking about an Etnan of a Yisraelit, because an Etnan of Yisraelit doesn't exist. Since it doesn't exist, that can't be the case that the Braita was speaking about, and that's why the Gemara said it was speaking about a non-Jewish Zonah, and then since it's being a non-Jewish Zonah, we need the Lakeach, or the Lakuach part about it, to bring it into the world of Maser, because otherwise it wouldn't be in the world of Maser if it was in the hands of the Zonah Kutit. Just as a note, of course, Rava in the Gemara in Tmura disagrees with the Baye and says that the definitions are overlapping. That which is a zonah for a kohen is also a zonah for etnan, and therefore you can't make the distinction that a Baye makes. But then you have to ask, according to Rava, what that means. If the woman is deemed a zonah because of the definition of kohen, but the individual who is consorting with her has no isur, then you'd have to ask, is that problem of Etnan? Tosafot also notes that the statement over here is not foolproof, and that is because there are times where a Zonah Yisraelit will have a classification of Etnan, even according to Abaye, where the Etnan or the Zonah is also an Yisur Arayot, because there will be no Tfisat Kedushin. And so if the example that the Gemara says, a Ba'al Imo, someone who has a relationship with their mother, and then pays for that relationship, that would be etnan zonah, because of the fact that there was no tafsi ba'kidushin. So Tosafot says it's not a foolproof statement over here that a Jewish zonah will never have etnan, but the point over here is the contrast between a kutit and an Israelite, whereby a kutit will always be defined as etnan, whereas by the Israelite, there are times where it will not be defined as etnan. That's the point here, even though there are times also where an Etnan Israelit can also have the din of Etnan. Next Mishnah is a difficult Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that also appears in Shkalim, and it's just as difficult in the Gemara in Shkalim, partly because of Girsa issues, partly because of understanding issues. The first is Achim, and you can see here, V'hashutafim. That would seem to imply that you're dealing with two different cases. You're dealing with Achim, Ve'ashutafim, and also shutafim. But, as you can see already, the Girsaot over here are changed. Rashi, the Rabbeinu Gershom, both have a Girsa that are Hachim Hashutafim, brothers that are partners. And they take out the Vav. So we're going to read it that way. The Rambam reads it as being distinct cases, and the Rambam has a very unique way of learning this Mishnah as well as the Mishnah in Shkalim. We're going to follow Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom, which is, we're speaking about Achim HaShutafim, brothers who are partners. Shechayavin b'kalbon, if they are chayav to give the kalbon, which is the extra coin that comes along with the machatzita shekel, then they are p'turim b'maser b'ema. That makes them p'tur from maser b'ema. Chayavin b'maser b'ema, on the other hand, if they are chayav in maser b'ema, p'turim in a kalbon, then they do not have to pay kalbon, or in essence, they are mutually exclusive events. If you have the status for one, then you don't have the status for the other. And so therefore, you can only be one or the other. You're either patur mimaser beima, or you're patur mina kalbon. And then, according to the way that Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom are reading it, the latter half of the Mishnah is the explanation of the first half of the Mishnah. According to Rambam, the second half of the Mishnah is a completely different case. Kanu mitfisat abayit chayavin. If they do not break up the estate, they leave the estate intact, and with the monies of the estate, they purchase an animal or they purchase something, chayavin. In that case, they are going to be chayav. V'im lav, if not, they are turim. Then they will be patur from maaser beima. Chalku, if they split up the estate, v'chazru v'nishtatfu, and then they rejoin, repool their assets, then chayavin b'kalbon. In that case, they will be chayav in the kalbon, upturim maaser beima, and then they will be patur from maaser beima. So what becomes clear here from the Mishnah, which the Gemara will ask, is that shutafim, partners, are patur mimaser beima. The kalbon, which you have to pay, a partnership doesn't help you out for, and you would still have to pay it. So as far as Meiser Beima is concerned, partnership is an event that makes you patur. So where they divide up the estate and then repool their assets, they're no different than any other partnership, and therefore they're going to be patur, Meiser Beima. The other hand, if they never divide the assets, they never subdivide the estate, and then they leave the estate intact and purchase from the estate animals, or they continue to work with the estate, then they are not considered to be partners, because there's never any division and then repooling of the assets. It's as if they're stepping into their father's shoes. Given that, they're not patur mimaiser beima, because it's not shutafut. It's as if the father is still there, and as if there's a single ownership associated with these assets. That's as far as maiser beima is concerned. With regards to machatzita shekel, there is a requirement when you bring up the machatzita shekel to give a ma'ak tana, a small coin along with the machatzita shekel. The shekel HaKodesh or the sela is worth 4 dinar, and then there are 6 ma'ah in a dinar. So it's about 1/24th of a shekel that you're giving. If you're giving a machatzita shekel with a ma'ah, it's 1/12th of a shekel that you would be giving. That extra coin, Rashi over here brings to the Shonot as to what the purpose of that coin is. One point is that it's lehechreya, that is to weigh it out. We saw something like this in the Gemarot earlier, that when you go to weigh something on the scale, the merchant puts a little extra on it to weigh it, not make it exactly even what you're paying for in terms of weight, but to put it a little in your favor. That's called hechreya. So the same thing over here. The extra coin there is to ensure that the machatzita shekel that's been given is really a machatzita shekel. That's because the coins in those days, the stored value of the coins is based on the weight of the coin, the size of the coin, and the wear and tear on the coin. So machatzita shekel, they could be coins that are in good condition, those that are in poor condition. And so to ensure that everybody gave a machatzita shekel, we put this extra little piece on to ensure that everything equals up to a machatzita shekel. That could be what the hechreya is. Or the hechreya, as Rashi says here, is the amount to exchange the coins. When you give the machatzita shekel to the mikdash, if they're going to consolidate that onto coins afterwards, or they have to break coins down into machatzita shekel, either way, you have to pay the money changer a fee. And so the hechreya is that fee. So we assume that you pay that extra fee to the mikdash to cover the fee or the cost of them having to exchange the money or do whatever they need to do with the money. That's the kalbon. So it's for one of those two reasons that the kalbon is paid. The kalbon is paid by each individual. That means any person bringing a machatzita shekel is chayav in kalbon. Now, if you take a partnership and the partners pool their assets and now they want to pay machatzita shekel, instead of paying a machatzita shekel each, they pay a full shekel between them. That full shekel will still require kalbon to be paid. That's because shutafot does not eliminate the necessity for kalbon. According to most, that means you have to pay 2 kalbonim, a kalbon for each person's machatzita shekel there. On the other hand, if a father pays on behalf of his children, whereby he's not obligated necessarily to do so, but he's paying on behalf of his children, and it's a single individual making the payment, over there we do not require that you pay the kalbon. So the way Rashi phrases it over here is if he's paying for his 2 children, then he's paying a full shekel, he only has to give 1 kalbon. He doesn't have to give 2 kalbonot. We look at it as if it's 1 payment. Rashi and other places say he doesn't have to pay kalbon at all. You don't have to pay it at all because you're paying on behalf of someone else. We're not going to, on top of that, charge you a kalbon as well. But that's only if you're paying for someone who is not otherwise chayav to pay or you're not chayav to pay for. Therefore, the kalbon is waived. So over here, in the case of the brothers that split the assets of the estate, then repooled the assets, they're no different than any other sutaf. That means if they pay a shekel together, they're both going to have to pay kolbanot over here because they're like 2 partners that got together where there's no reason to believe that you're patur from the kolbanot. The other hand, if they don't break the estate up, they leave the estate intact, which means that they're not considered to be partners. They're as if they're stepping into their father's shoes. In that case, if they pay the shekel for the both of them, that shekel will only require, here according to Rashi here, 1 kalbon, or Rashi in other places, no kalbon at all, because it's being paid by the estate as a singular individual that's paying for 2 parties, and therefore there's no necessity either for the double kalbon or even for kalbon at all. That's what makes these items mutually exclusive, which is partnership makes Meiser Beima Patur, partnership makes you chayav in kalbon. Estate remaining intact makes you chayav in Maser Beima, But that's what makes it that you're patur min hakalbon. That's what the Mishnah describes over here, these two mutually exclusive events. Now, Gemara says, Tanur Banan, how do you know that partnership is not chayav in Maaser Behemah? Gemara quotes, Yelach. Yelach is found in Parshat Korach about Bechor. It says, Koper terechem dechol basar, sheyakrivu la'ashem badamu behemah, Yelach, ach bodo tifteh ta Bechor adam vet Bechor behemah tmeyah tifteh. So you have a statement about Bechor and where it says, Yelach. Yelach, velo shoshu tafut. Your animal is chayav, but not a partnership's animal. Yochol afilu kano betfisat abayit. You think that'd be true, even if you purchase it with the estate intact. Tamalomer, yeah. It is maser beima no matter what. So you have yeah, which says that it is no matter what. And you have lach, that says no shutafut. The difference will be that if they are quote-unquote partners of the estate, but the estate remains in basically the hands of the deceased father, they never break it up, and they just continue to operate the estate as if it was their father's possession, then in that case, you will be chayav in Maaser Behemah, because that's iya. Lach will exclude it when either you've split the estate and re-partnered, or partners in general will be patur, because it has to be lach, it has to be your sole ownership, not a joint ownership. Vai bibachor ktiv. Little problem, it's a really nice drasha, but it has nothing to do with Maaser Behemah. Those supim are written by Bechor. If it's not necessary for Bechor, da'ita b'shutafut. Because a Bechor, we know, does have a din that it's brought b'shutafut. That's based on the pasuk in Devarim, Yud Bet, Pashat Rei, Dechtim, because it says there, ve'veitem shama olotechem, v'zivcheichem, v'et masrotechem, v'et shumat yedchem, v'nidrechem, v'nidvotechem, u'bechorod bikarchem v'tzonechem. So it's in plural, bikarchem and tzonechem, which teaches you that shutafut or partners are chayav in Bechor. So if partners are chayav in Bechor, the miut that we have here in Parshat Korach can't be referencing to Bechor, must be referencing to something else. And so therefore, it's neyu inyan maaser beimah. Then it makes sense to use it for maaser beimah because you don't need it for Bechor. Again, we discussed in yesterday's daf, top of the Amud Aleph, that Bechor and maaser beimah are closely correlated. There are three korbanot that are always put together. That's the Bechor, Maaser, and the Pesach, which in Izum and Koman are joined together. That's because they have very similar properties. So the closest item to Bechor, if you say, I don't need it for Bechor, what would I use it for? It makes sense to say that it's speaking about Maaser Behemah. And that tells us that by Maaser Behemah, there's a miut, there's an exclusion for Shutafut, to say that if you have a partnership, you're Patur Maaser Behemah. Tosafot on the first Amud of the Masechta discusses why the possibility that we need multiple miutim to tell us that a shutafut by Bechor is chayav, because Israel is chayav, the mutei shutafut ovid kochavim, to tell you that a partnership with a goy makes you patur, that implies that a partnership with another Jew would be chayav. So why do I need bikarchem etzonchem? So over there, Tosafot notes that you needed one for the ubar and one for the mother. Since that, you have two different issues that can create the patur. You could create a patur because the mother is owned by somebody who is patur, or you could create a patur because the offspring is owned by someone who is patur. So here you have two ribuyim in essence. One to tell you that the ubar is chayav b'shutafut, and one to tell you that the mother b'shutafut is also chayavet. And that's why we have two limudim to teach you that information. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, pamim shechayavim bezeh bezeh. He basically brings the four possible permutations. Our mission only addressed two permutations, the mutually exclusive cases. But there are cases where you're chayav both in kalbon and in maaser behemah. Pamim shepaturim mi bezeh bezeh. Sometimes you patur mi kalbon and patur mi maaser behemah. Pamim shechayavim bekalbon upaturim mi maaser. Times where you are chayav in kalbon, patur mimaser, which was the case addressed by our Mishnah, and vice versa, there are times where pamim shechayavim b'maser beimah b'tumim min hakalbon. Times where you're chayav in the maaser beimah and patur min hakalbon, which is the other case that our Mishnah addressed. Chayavim b'zeh b'zeh, where are the cases where you're chayav in both of them? Shechalku b'ksafim v'lo chalku b'beimah. They divided up the estate with regards to the monies of the estate, but they didn't divide it up with regards to the animals of the estate. So since the monies have been distributed and divided up, they're considered to be shutafim with regards to the monies. Therefore, they have to pay kabon for machzid shekel. The animals were not divided up. That means they're not in a partnership. They're still running it as if it's in their father's ownership. There's no shutafut here. You're chayav in meiser beima. Their puzzle in both is where shechalku beima, where they split the estate with regards to the animals. Therefore, when they repooled their assets, they are shutafim, and shutafim are peturim from maser beima. But they left the monies of the estate intact. They did not split that. And therefore, it's as if their father is paying for the machzid shekel for both of them. And therefore, they are p'turim min ha-kalbon. Chayvim ba-kalbon p'turim min ma'aser be'ema. Cases where you're chayav in kalbon, but p'turim min ma'aser be'ema. That's the case of our Mishnah, shechalku ba-zeh ba-zeh. That's where they divided the estate entirely and then repooled their assets. There, you're chayav in kalbon because you are shutafim. You're p'turim min ma'aser be'ema because you are shutafim. Chayvim b'maser be'ema p'turim min ha-kalbon. Case where you're chayav in ma'aser be'ema p'turim min ha-kalbon. Also the case of the Mishnah, shelo chalku b'zeh, that they didn't divide up either one of the assets of the estate. The estate remained intact. Since it's intact, as far as kalbon is concerned, you don't need to pay it. But for ma'aser be'ema, you consider it a single ownership, and therefore you're chayav in ma'aser be'ema. Where it says, pshita, all of these are pretty straightforward. All he did was take the information from our Mishnah and then create cases for the four permutations. What did he add for us? The Gemara says, Chalku b'beima v'lo chalku b'ksafim itzrichalei. Where you divided up the animals of the estate and did not divide up the cash of the estate, that's where we need it. Sagadat kamina, over there I would have thought, that is the kula in both of them. In the case where you divided the animals and now you pull them together, you're a shutafim for the animals, patur mi ma'aser be'ema, but you didn't split the monies of the estate, therefore you're patur min ha-kalbon. That's the case where it works out the kula on both sides. You would have thought, came into chalku b'beima, since they already split up the assets of the estate with regards to the animals, galud da'atayu de l'mifla kaime, that they're also going to divide the rest of the estate at some point, and we redeem it as if they already split the assets or the monies of the estate, and therefore the chayvu b'kalbon, that it should be chayav in kalbon, kamash v'lan, that until you split up the monies of the estate, they're still considered to be part of the father's estate, and therefore they're not chayav in kalbon, even though there's some indication that in the future they will split it, because they already split the animals of the estate. And the Rabbeinu Gershom adds the fact that normally people would keep animals in a partnership, because the effort that needs to be extended in order to manage and take care of the animals is extensive, and therefore having partners makes sense. The fact that they went through the trouble of splitting it up means that they really intend to split the estate, and that's why I would have thought if you split the animals, then you would also split the monies. Whereas vice versa, that would not have been the case necessarily. Just because you split the monies doesn't mean you would have split the beima, because splitting money is easy. Splitting beimot is both difficult in the process of splitting them, but it's also difficult from the standpoint that now you're solely responsible for the animals. That's why the Rabbeinu Yerushim sees the chiddush over here. Amar Ravana, lo shanu ilo shechalku gida'im keneged tiyashim. The only time that this is relevant is where they basically divided up the assets, not evenly, but on an exchange basis. Which means that you take kids, and I'll take the fully mature goat. In that situation, it's clear that they're not splitting the estate. What they're doing is valuation. And saying, I'm taking this value, you take that value, and the values are equal. But that's basically a bartered exchange, or in essence, lekuchim. It's as if they purchased from each other these items. So there, lo shanu elu shechalku gidayim keneged tayashim, u tayashim keneged gidayim. Aval, in a case, chalku gidayim keneged gidayim, u tayashim keneged tayashim, they split up the estate by giving the gidayim to each party. Half the gidayim to this one, half the gidayim to that one. Half the tayashim to this one, half the tayashim to that one. Omer, zeh chalku amigiyah amisha rishona. We say that basically there's breira. And this is what you were entitled to from the estate. Or in essence, there was no division of the estate. You're continuing to operate as if you're in the estate because you got what belonged to you from the estate. You're just managing what came to you from the estate. There was no likicha. There was no splitting and then rejoining of the assets because the assets were the assets that belonged to you all along. So in summary, Rashi sees over here the pooling of the assets again, being affected by how the division was done. If you pull the assets in a situation where they're considered to be lukukot, then the pulling of the assets doesn't do anything. And you have a problem with the animals that exist now because they are lukukot, and animals in the future will be born to a shutafut. And therefore, they'll be patur for maaser behema in both of those instances. On the other hand, if the division of the estate was classified as breiro or as yerusha, then when you re-pull the assets, that really pulling of the assets is if you reacquired the assets, and therefore it will undo the status of lekuchot for the animals that were divided up between them, because it was a Yerusha that's brought back into Tfisat HaBayit. And for the animals born in the future, there will also be a single ownership of the Tfisat HaBayit. So Rashi sees the re-pulling of the assets as being the key factor, and the question is, how did you get to the re-pulling of the assets? Now then, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says that the Iker division is what determines over here. If they break it up and they're considered to be lukuchot, then there are p'turim because lukuchot are p'turim from Maaser Behema. If they split it up and they're considered to be yorshim, then yorshim are chayavim in Maaser Behema because they're not classified as lukuchot. And that in itself, without repulling of the assets, would make it that you are p'tur from Maaser Behema. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom learns. Rashi and other places in Shas rejects that view. And over here he explains that it has to do with the re-pulling of the assets and what is the background to the re-pulling of the assets. Rav Nachman Amar, Afilu Chalku, Kedayim, Keneged Kedayim, Utiyashim, Keneged Teyashim, Ein Omrim Zehu Chalku, Magia Mishar Rishona. We don't say that there's Breira, that he believes that Achim, that split up the estate, are Kelechuchotami. They're like purchasers. You never get what exactly belongs to you in the estate, because we don't know what exactly belongs to you in the estate. And whatever you do to split up the estate, in essence, is a bartered transaction. You take that and you take that. Even though we're taking 50% of every item, it's still a bartered transaction because you never know that your piece came to you and his piece came to him, and therefore you're always lukuchot. So Rav Nachman believes that they're a lukuchot, and therefore for Rav Nachman, it doesn't matter how the estate is divided. It doesn't matter if it's divided 50% of every item to each party, or whether it's 100% of one item to you and 100% of one item to me. Either one of those is considered to be a valuation division, and therefore everybody's lukuchot, and the din of the Mishnah will apply because it's a division that is significant in both cases. According to Rav Anan, there's a difference between whether you get 50% of each item versus if you get 100% of one item, he gets 100% of the other item. The case where it's 50-50, it's Yerusha, not lukuchot, and therefore it's as if the estate is continuing and there was no division of the assets. You got what belonged to you originally. And so therefore, when you pull the assets, it's as if the estate never broke up, because what came to you was yours already anyway. And so when you pull the assets back together, it's as if the estate was never broken up. On the other hand, if it's one item versus another item, there you divide it by value. There's clearly lukuchot, and it was a bartered transaction that created the Yerusha. Now, Rabbi Elazar Amar, Loshna, Elishacholku, Tet, Keneged Yud, Yud, Keneged Tet. The only way that the case is considered to be a split estate, whereby the rejoining of the estate is now a shutafut, is when the original estate was broken down. You take 10, and I'll take 9. So say there's sheep. You take 10 sheep, I'll take 9 sheep. Their values are the same, because I got the bigger of the 9, and you took the smaller 10, but that's clearly a bartered transaction, because that's about value, not about numbers. Aval chalku, tet keneged tet, but yud keneged yud. If you have it split up, that you get 9, I get 9, you get 10, I get 10, then Omer Zechelko Megio Misharishona. That is basically the original, what belonged to you in the estate. There is Breira. And given that there is Breira, then the division is not really a division. And then when you pull your assets, it's as if the estate never broke up. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, in the first case, it was Rav Nachman arguing on Rav Anan. Over here, it's Rabbi Yochanan arguing on Rabbi Elazar. Amar afilu chalko tet keneged tet basara keneged asara ein omer zechelko mevia mishar rishona. Here there is no breira, and therefore it's a bartered transaction. You're considered to be likuchot, and that's what the Gemara says here. Va'azda Rabbi Yochanan netame. Rabbi Yochanan follows his shita. Damar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan achin shechalko likuchot ein. Brothers that divide up the estate are always considered to be purchasers. Umachzirin zelazebi yovel. And therefore, every yovel, they have to put everything back into the pool and redivide the assets again, because it's as if they bought a leasehold in the property until the yovel. They don't own the property. They're, in essence, leasing the property from each other, because nobody knows what belongs to them and what belongs to the other brother. And therefore, everybody is viewed as a buyer or a leaser of the property. And therefore, in the Yovel, you have to redo the division again. So now you have two machlokot over here, and they reflect the same thing. One was about type of animal versus other type of animal. The other one was numbers versus numbers. In each of those cases, we have an opinion, Rav Hanan and Rav Elazar, who believe that there is Breira. And therefore, if you do it in a way that it is not a transactional split of the estate, it's as if the estate wasn't split because we say Breira and you got what you deserved all the way along. On the other hand, you have Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan of the same Shita that ain't Breira, and therefore you're always considered to be a Lekuach in the estate. Doesn't matter if it is uneven numbers or animals that are different, or even when the numbers are even and the animals are the same animals, doesn't matter, all of that is considered to be Lekuchot. And where it says Vitzrichei, why do I need two different cases to tell me the same information? Diashminan Hacha, if you told me about it here, Bahakam Rabbi Yochanan, over here Rabbi Yochanan says the din is such that there's no Breira, because Dumnia Debincha, because the Meiser Beima has the Hekesh to Bechor Banecha Titenli, Kein Tasel Shorcha Vitzonecha. That Hekesh tells you, Ma Bincha Bebarur Lecha, Af Shorcha Vitzonecha Bebarur Lecha. So there the Meiser Beima is only over something where you have clear and distinct ownership over the animal. Where there's any questions or fuzziness about the ownership over the animal or your ownership over whatever portion is here, then already that would make it that you're not chayav in Meiser Beima. Or the way Rashi phrases it over here is, shnolad birshutcha, that Barur Lecha has to be born in your possession. And when it comes to Yerusha, it wasn't born in your possession. Therefore it'd be patur mimaser beima, not because of Rabbi Yochanan's statement that the Achim are the Kuchot, but simply because Yerusha is also a situation in which you'd be patur mimaser beima, because it's not shnolad birshutcha. Avasadeh, the case where Rabbi Yochanan said the statement that they are kluchuchot and goes back in the Ovel, that's only relevant by Sadot, mecherhu, darmar rachmano lehader biovel. The Torah says that transactions are reversed in the Ovel, Yerusha matana lo, but inheritance and gifts are not reversed in the Ovel, or don't revert back to the original owners in the Ovel. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan comes to dispel and say it's not just because it's an animal that was born in your possession. That is why you're patur. You're patur because you are in the kuchot. And there's a broader issue here of Yerusha, your shim being the kuchot, than simply just being that the animal that's not born in your possession is patur mimaser beima. V'yishmin and sadeh, had you only told me the din by sadeh, that's because over there it's the chumrah. Turns out that it's a chumrah, and you have to re-divide the assets every yovel because they go back to the original state. That's why he says it over there. But by the case over here of Behemoth, where it's going to turn out to be the Kula, the fact that you call them the Kuchot makes it that you have a Ptura of Lekuach, and then if you re-pull the assets, you have a Ptura of Shutafut, that makes it your Paturmi, my Sebema, that's the Kula. Maybe you wouldn't say it. Iname Lechatchila, or you would say that that is a din that is only associated with Sadeh, because by Yovel, Karka goes back to its original state that it was beforehand. Is there more even dramatic explanations of Inam al-Khatkhila, which would be that it goes back to the original division of the land, where each portion of the land was only owned by a single individual, or even more kitsoni, more extreme, would be that it goes back all the way to Avram Avinu, where there's a single ownership, which is that by Sadeh, there's a reason to revert back to its original state. But that means the state before the children divided it up, the state when it was originally divided up to all the different Shvatim, or the state when Avram Avinu had it. There is a point in time where it was consolidated, and therefore there's reason to believe that a Sadeh should go back to that consolidated state. But that's a unique din with regards to Sadeh of Ahaka, but here, Emalo. Over here, maybe there's no such din of it being Lekuchot, because there's no din of going back to the original state. The Tricha, that's why I need Rabbi Yochanan to tell me both by the case of Beima, as well as the case of Sadeh, that we have this din that the Yorshim are classified as Lekuchot. Meitavei, v'chein ha-shutavim shechalku, a shutavim that divided up, echad natal asara, v'chad natal tisha v'kelev. One of them took 10 of the animals of the partnership. The other one took 9 animals and the dog. Shekeneged HaKelev Asurin. The animals that are on the opposite side, meaning the person who didn't take the dog, all of those are Asur to go on the Mizbeach. Shema Keleb, the animals that are together with the dog, those can go, Mutarim, to go on the Mizbeach. This is what's otherwise known as Mechir Keleb. The Torah says that if you exchange an animal for a dog, that it's disqualified from the Mizbeach. So here, when you split the assets, 10 animals to one party, 9 animals plus a dog to the other party. So the party that has the 9 animals and the dog, his animals are fine to go on his back, because they're not being exchanged for a dog. The party that took the 10 animals, and on the opposite side of that transaction, the split of the Sutta food, he has a dog and 9 animals, that dog is going to disqualify all the animals on the other side. So Gemara says, Bima Mart Yesh Breira, according to those that say that there is Breira, when it comes to an estate divided up, so too by a partnership. Whatever we divide up in the partnership should be what's magiali. That's the case. Liv lo echad minayu, tabah de kelef. Then pick one of the animals that is opposite the dog, the lishkol, and that one will be disqualified. V'hanach lishtare, and then the other 9 animals should be mutarim. You have 10 animals, 9 animals and a dog. So just line them up. The ones that are opposite the other animals are not considered to be mechir kelef. The one animal that you have opposite the dog will be mechir kelef. So then it will be one animal that's disqualified, not all the animals will be disqualified. So if you have Breira, that means that whatever came to you, belonged to you originally, then you can also say Breira with regards to which one of them is associated with the dog and which are not associated with the dog. But even though, as Tosafot points out over here, Breira shouldn't do anything for you, because even if there is Breira, you have no idea which one of the opposing animals is the one that was exchanged for the caliph. So why does that make you in any better shape? So tell us what says something about Breira, which is that once you invoke the condition of Breira, you have a lot of latitude. And that is, the Eish Lamar, Shekach Svarat HaShas, Kevin Sheish Breira, Shiladar Ish Lavar Diot Taloi Bedato, that once there's Breira, then your decision has impact on the items itself. The Mistama Kach Dato Mitchila, because we assume that that was the original intent, or that was the nature of these things beforehand. Otoshi Vor Keneged HaKelev. So too then, when you pick whichever one it is you think is opposite the Kelev, we assume that that was the original intent as well. So Breira basically says that whatever is the decision in the end was really what the decision was in the beginning. And so if you apply that over here, it means that you would also decide that whichever animal is Keneged HaKelev, that was always that way, and that's the way it should have been from the outset. And in that way, you could then say one animal is Asur, and the remaining animals are Mutarim. Or the other way to formulate it is that, in the case of any other type of Isur Ve'eter, the items were defined, distinguished, distinct beforehand, and then they got mixed together. Over there, we don't say Breira, that one of the items is the Isur, and everything else is okay. Whereas over here, where the items were never distinct or distinguished, there we can invoke the principle of Breira and say that once we've chosen which one it is, that's what it was all the way along. Amar Ravashi, Ida Shavu Kulu Adadi Achanami. Had they all been of equal value, you would have been right. Hakamai Skinan, Delo Shavu Kulu Adadi. You don't all equal in value. Babi Vishavi Hai Kalba Chadu Mashu. And this dog is worth one and a little more. Vahai Mashu Mashi Fati Bikulu. And that affects all the other animals that are in the corral. So for instance, in the case here where you have 10 animals, and each one of the animals is worth 4 shekel plus a tenth. So it's 4.1 for each of the animals. That means on an aggregated basis, they're equal to 41 shekel. Because you have 10 animals at 4.1, 41 shekel is the total value. On the other side, you have 9 sheep and a dog. Each of the sheep is worth 4 shekel. 9 times 4 is 36. That means that the dog has to 5 shekel. That 5 shekel is the equivalent of a 4.1 of a sheep on the other side, plus all the 0.1s of all the sheep on the other side. Because he's covering the deficit between the sheep. You have 4.1 on one side, 4 on the other side. There's a deficit of 0.1 between each of the parties. That deficit is made up by that 5th shekel that the kelev is worth. Given that, the kelev is really connected all the animals on the other side. Even if you say there's Breira, that still doesn't help you over here, because even if you say Breira, the dog is still covering the value at least a portion of the value of all the animals, and therefore all the animals have a din of Mechir Kelev, and that's why all the animals are disqualified, even though you hold a Breira. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah and Zion Amud Aleph.